Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Evident Footprints Show on BBSRadio.com. I am your host, Don Nikoloff. I'll be with you for the next hour, and I won't be alone tonight. I've got two great guests, and we're going to get right down to business on March the 25th here on the East Coast and March the 24th still on the West Coast. I have a special guest tonight. Let's say, I like to call him a producer. He has actually come up with some really interesting videos. They're political parodies, actually, and there's a lot of truth in them. I've had a chance to look at his work on the web. He's known as Doug from Upland, and yet tonight we're going to call him by his real name, and then maybe shorten it a bit, Douglas Cogan. I'm bringing him on as Doug Cogan, or Doug from Upland. Doug, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. I hope you're the same, Don.
Well, I've had a very busy day, a very interesting day, very communicative day, but yes, I am doing well. Bit run down, but there's just so much going on, you have to keep going.
Well, this political battle keeps giving us the energy to keep going forward, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And, you know, I'm seeing people awaken today. It just was an incredible day. There's a lot going on. A lot of it we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about some very important issues involving one of the candidates. Doug, I want to mention to our listening audience that you're going to be on for the whole show, and you have been gracious enough for me to invite a gentleman who is representing Rick Stanley in a legal battle, which is about to move to the Supreme Court of the United States. And his attorney, John Clark, is with us for the first quarter of the show tonight. So I want to thank you personally for being gracious enough to actually participate in this conversation.
Hey, John, it's my honor to share some time with John. He's doing great work.
Yes, thank you. So with that, we're going to just move right along here so we don't waste any time and invite on board again for the second night in a row, Mr. John Clark. John, how are you?
I'm hanging in there, sir. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I'm presuming your phone line's burned off the hook today.
Well, it has, and we've been keeping busy.
Well, that's good. What are Rick and Pam Stanley's spirits like today, knowing that, you know, you did a whole hour yesterday?
Well, Pam stays very busy running the business while Rick's incarcerated, and I don't talk to Rick regularly. I did not talk to him today, but I did talk to Pam, and she's trying to do the work of two right now. So that's one of the reasons we'd like to get him out, so she doesn't have to keep rowing the boat with one oar.
Yes. Now for the listeners, and I'm not going to make you go through the whole history, especially what you went through. It's very well presented, very lucid description. I have the press release posted on my website, directlightproductions.com, and I know we were going to try to get something up on our trusted news trader right here at bbsradio.com. And if it's not up there, I can guarantee you by tomorrow it will be. If I have to put it up there myself, we'll get it up there. We're trying to get the word out so that people can go there and actually read what you wrote. But in essence, can you be brief and explain Rick's dilemma and why this is important to all Americans?
Well, sure, if I can. It's a little complex factually, as you point out, but essentially Rick was a political candidate for U.S. Senate in Colorado back in 2002 and was protesting local gun ordinances, which he said violated his constitutional rights. And after being convicted of violating those ordinances, and when the Colorado legislature passed a statute striking them down, Rick refused to turn himself in to serve the 90 days in jail and instead filed a notice with the court, with the trial court and with the appellate court where he'd already appealed, representing himself. And in that notice, he told the judges that they should reverse his convictions and return his gun or else they were violating his constitutional rights in violation of their oath of office, and that he would cause an arrest warrant for treason to issue if they didn't do so. They promptly had him arrested on two counts of threatening a public official with intent attempting to influence a public official by threat. That carries, instead of 90 days of the gun charge, those carried 3 years each, which is what he got after trial and conviction. He's sitting in jail on a six-year total sentence, two maximum three-year sentences running consecutively for a man with no criminal record, an honorably discharged veteran who was acting in his capacity campaigning for office as a libertarian candidate, which is quite consistent with his platform. What I find remarkable is I cannot, Don, find a case in American history in any state in which a man has been incarcerated for threatening to arrest someone, let alone for threatening to issue an arrest warrant. So if Rick Stanley's conviction stands, it really sends a message to Americans that we have to be very careful about what we say. If I were to go out in public with a sign that said George Bush should be tried for treason and arrested if he doesn't pull out of Iraq within such and such a time, could I be incarcerated and lose my right to vote and my right to bear arms for life the way Rick has, because it could be interpreted by someone to be a threat against the president's life? We've got pretty clear laws on the books about this, and we're hoping that the Supreme Court will affirm that now and hear this case on Friday when it takes a look at this writ.
Mm-hmm. Now, it makes one wonder, John and Doug, what this country's coming to when one is exercising their constitutional rights and they're perceived as threats by the very people who should understand the meaning of those words. Any comment, either Doug or John?
Well, Doug, I don't want to cut you off, but I would emphasize that, as you know, Don, this all started when Rick was first protesting, long before the notices. When he was first protesting, the federal government was watching him and his supporters through the Domestic Anti-Terrorism Task Force. And what's also perhaps concerning is that it is public officials like judges and politicians who are supposed to be thick-skinned, and we're supposed to be criticizing them and be able to hold them accountable within certain limits. So when the court, like in this situation, has the power to incarcerate someone because they don't like what he's saying, it really looks like a silencing of free speech to me.
I'll comment on judges. I'm in California. We've got the 11th District, the 9th Circuit Court of Appeals out here, and that's just a court that's run wild. These people in black robes are out of control, in my opinion. Many of them need to be removed from the bench, but since these appointments in some cases are lifetime appointments, you can't do it.
Well, yeah, it raises a lot of questions. Number one, there is this issue that we are responsible for allowing this to occur, for not voicing our discontent when this was going down. It's almost as if we were sleepwalking as citizens, and now we're waking up and we're seeing that these policies have been enacted for a number of years and really done almost secretly or covertly in a way. And when the hammer finally comes down and we realize what we're facing, we've got to come up with a solution. How are we going to get around this? Any ideas?
Doug, or I don't want to hog the phone.
No, I'm going to have plenty of time after you, John. I'm real interested in hearing from you to learn about this case, because I plead ignorance to this case. I just haven't been able to pay attention to it.
Well, I think, as to the case, the more we publicize it, the more Americans can become aware, because often it seems like our government is amorphous and it's hard to pin it down. And when we have clear examples, then we should be able to hold them up to the limelight or to hold them up to the light and try to assess them. Americans know who Jose Padilla is. It could be argued that the end justified the means in denying someone like him habeas corpus. But in the case of Rick Stanley, the end is as horrible as the means. It seems like the end here was to silence him. Rick's case concerns the First and the Second Amendment rights. It is not a gun rights case. There is not a Second Amendment issue before the court in Rick's writ. It is entirely, purely a First Amendment case. But it began and ended about a protest for gun rights. That's what, you know, motivated this. That's the only reason Rick did it. This was pure political speech. And now we have a man sitting in jail. So I think that we need to publicize Rick Stanley's case as much as we do Jose Padilla's. I think we need to animate people by educating them. And I don't know, the founders told us this as well, is that a democracy wouldn't work with an ignorant populace. And nothing's changed. So the antidote to falsehood is always truth.
Hey, John, does this particular judge have a history of doing these kinds of things?
Well, what's a little unusual here, or at least I thought remarkable, because I'm not in Colorado and I don't know the history, but the trial judge, Judge Quinn, was a retired judge who was pretty much off the bench, filling in the lower courts, but he had been for a long time the Chief Justice of the Colorado Supreme Court. And a person with that kind of longevity and presence in any court system is going to be afforded an awful lot of deference on appeal. So it
sure
certainly seemed like maybe that did affect why, because many people expected this case to have been overturned long before it got to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Yes, often this is done to save the reputation of the judge. We touched upon what's going on behind the scenes with the judges and many of the attorneys and the special court appointees who are brought in as expert witnesses repeatedly in many, many cases. It's not just this case alone. When you stand up against what appears to be an element of organized crime behind the scenes that is dictating the policies of the court and directing the flow of the proceeds of court cases of all types, it really stinks to high heaven. And many of these judges are stepping down from the bench in certain areas. We talked about this on Mission Possible last night, about what's going on in the state of Illinois, particularly in Cook County. Cook County is not the only place this is happening, though. We hear about these cases in Connecticut, in New York, in New Jersey, Louisiana, California, Washington, Utah. It's prevalent everywhere, and it's really an organized crime ring that is, it's putting the fear of God in these judges. They don't dare falter, or they're going to suffer worse than just stepping down from the bench. And there have been many, many cases. Now, I don't mean to put out that fear, but this is a reality. This is what's really going on behind the scenes. And I stressed that to you, John, when you mentioned to me what the judge had done and the way they twist the language. There's no reason to make a man guilty of something that he's not guilty of, other than to take money and to destroy him and to seize his assets. And it's going on to regular people. It's going on to single mothers or divorced mothers. It's happening to children. It's happening to the elderly. This is a sickness. This is more than just violating the law. It's really a sickness. You know, I'm speaking from the heart here, too.
Well, and as we discussed last night, it is, and something else I didn't mention is that it's becoming very widespread, and it's extending down below the federal government into all levels of our police state. And something I've noticed as an attorney in the last 10 years, particularly post 9/11, is that there's been a dramatic increase in the amount of illegal searches by the police. They really do it with impunity now. They train particularly the state police to routinely question people without any reasonable suspicion or basis. There are a lot of stops going on, a lot of searches going on with impunity. And ultimately, it disturbs me because the police are supposed to protect and serve, and ultimately they end up alienating the very public that they work for. But I don't want to overstay the time because you gentlemen are so generous. I do want to point out Rick Stanley's website that he's been maintaining for a long time now, which is www.stanley2002.org. I also, today we posted a video on YouTube and on Google, which is about 9 minutes, I think, in which I try to summarize the case, and that's available. I don't have a link or an address, but it's easily discoverable under Rick Stanley and Free Speech. And I hope that people will spread that around and give it their approval and watch it a few times to try to create a buzz. And
hey, John, I'll make sure we get it on the Free Republic website for you, too.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you very much, Doug. But
okay.
I'll take more of you gentlemen's time for my client if you would like, but I am here to serve you, so you tell me from here.
Well, I want to make sure you get some rest. We've got a pretty complex issue we're going to discuss tonight. I mean, if you want to hang in and listen, you're welcome to stay. I'm not kicking you off the show.
Well, I would, but I am exhausted. I got up very early today, and I've been in the studio most of the day and on the phone, and my daughter has pneumonia, and I don't want it. And I got to get up early, too. But I would like to because I'm very interested, but I've got so much to do for all of us, and including with you tomorrow. So, Mr. Colgan, I thank you again for for allowing us
time. We sure get along better than Hillary and Obama, don't we, guys?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to follow up when I get through this week in the work you're doing. And,
good.
We need more satire in this nation. We've forgotten how to laugh at ourselves, and we need some Archie Bunkers.
Well, but besides the satire, the case on which I've been working, and it's the subject of my documentary film, Hillary Uncensored, is the Paul versus Clinton case, where Hillary Clinton has been absolutely above the law and just thumbing her nose at the law, John.
Well, I would be so surprised to learn that about her. I'm being facetious, but it's...
I understand. I'm picturing you as Baghdad Bob saying that.
Well, God bless you, gentlemen, and I'll
John
let you
Clark,
cover that subject.
Yes,
the best to your
Clark,
daughter, John.
Thank you so much for all that you're doing for Rick and Pam Stanley, and really for really every American citizen across the country. You're really doing a wonderful work, and I know that your reward is on the way. And
likewise to you guys.
You're all in our prayers. Know that, okay?
And likewise, and let's all pray for Pam and Rick, because there's going to be one heavy week for them. So I really thank you both again for helping us try to publicize the situation.
Nice meeting you, John.
Okay, and we'll see you tomorrow night on Evident Footprints again for the full hour. So,
all right, I'll get rested.
Hopefully.
Right.
As long as Dr. Horowitz will have you. Okay. You have a good night, John.
Thanks. You too, gentlemen. Bye.
Okay. Okay, Doug. Now that we know that we set the tone there, this is a pretty serious case. Now, the case you're involved in, do you want to give us a little bit of background to set up where things are here?
Yeah, and I can tell you that in the past I've been on shows as much as 2 and 2.5 hours, so I'll try and give you the quick version. It is amazingly complicated, which to some extent is why some of the mainstream media journalists really haven't covered it properly. But I hope when this finally gets to the point we're getting there where discovery is taking and Hillary and others are going to be under oath, they will. Let me give a background for the plaintiff in this case. His name is Peter Paul. Peter, back in the 80s, late 70s, was an anti-Castro fighter in Miami. He was an international attorney. He represented six South and Central American governments. Some operatives came to him and asked for his help, and they launched what was called the Cuban Coffee Caper. It was a sting on Fidel Castro. Castro was cheating his Soviet benefactors, which was propping up his regime. They were buying coffee at top market prices that they thought were the top quality Cuban coffee, but Fidel was sneaking in cheap black market coffee and pocketing the difference. And so these operatives came to Peter and said, you know what, we can cause Fidel some damage with his relationship to the Soviets if we expose this. And he agreed and got involved, and ultimately they ripped off, money changed hands. They were supposed to give him a big shipment of coffee. $8.7 million changed hands, and poor Fidel didn't get a cup of coffee.
Hmm.
So that was a good thing. Cuba mm-hmm. at the time was the only country in the world burdened by the Trading with the Enemy Act on. So you'd think if you do damage to Cuba, it would be a good thing for America. Unfortunately, the President of the United States at the time was a man named Jimmy Carter. Carter wanted better relations with Cuba, and he saw that Peter got prosecuted. Peter ended up keeping his mouth shut and not exposing other operations and ended up doing a couple years, 2.5 years in jail. We fast forward 20 years. He's now a Hollywood mogul. He remade his image, did some great things in Hollywood with the conservatives. He worked with Bob Hope and Jimmy Stewart, and he produced Reagan's Welcome Back to California party after his presidency. He represented Buzz Aldrin, got Muhammad Ali's biography published, did some really good things. And he, in 1998, got together with his friend Stan Lee, the creator of Spider-Man, to form an internet company called Stan Lee Media to take advantage of the creative talents of Stan and to have a worldwide presence on the internet of these great characters that inspire young people to do good things. He had the brilliant idea that he would bring a president leading office aboard the company to give speeches as a rainmaker for 1 year, and that would be a good thing for the company to raise a lot of money. Unfortunately, in the year 2000, we know who was just about to leave office, don't we?
Yes.
That would be William Jefferson Blythe Clinton. Peter did not pay enough attention to the person with whom he was dealing. He made a gentleman's agreement with Bill. He was solicited to help pay for Hillary's campaign, and in fact, he spent over $1.6 million on Hillary's campaign, the largest expenditure of which was the Hollywood Gala Salute to President William Jefferson Clinton. It was on August 12, 2000, a remarkable private concert like never before seen with 8 international headliners, Diana Ross, Cher, Michael Bolton, Patti LaBelle, Toni Braxton, Sugar Ray, Paul Anka, forgetting one other people. Anyway, it raised over $1 million for Hillary. Everybody was happy until a couple days after the concert when Lloyd Grove wrote a story in the Washington Post that exposed Peter Paul's felony background from 2 decades earlier. And that is when the Clinton team made the conscious decision they were going to disavow Peter Paul and almost pretend to hardly even know him. Not only did they not know him, but Hillary began a series of false reporting to the FEC where she never properly reported these contributions. That is the basis of the story. Now, the reason this is in court, it's a civil case, Paul versus Clinton, is because in the background was a guy named Jim Levin, who's a major player and one of the defendants. Jim Levin was the eyes and ears of Bill Clinton, sent to Los Angeles to essentially move into Stan Lee Media offices to vet the offer that Peter Paul was making to Bill Clinton. It was, by the way, a $17 million deal. It was $1 million to the library and the balance in stock and cash. So Levin signs a non-circ agreement. He's gathering all this proprietary information. And unknown to Peter, he's in the midst of stealing his Japanese business partner named Tendo Oto. Oto had already given $5 million to the company for their Japanese partnership with a promise of another $5 million in November. Levin convinced Oto that he could do business with he and the president and leave out Peter Paul, and he signed an agreement with Levin. They actually recorded that, Don, which is why we have proof of what went on here. They recorded that with the Secretary of State in Illinois 6 days after Hillary was elected. So come November 2000, when all the dot-coms were crashing, Stan Lee Media runs out of money, and it goes bankrupt. Peter Paul loses his stock, which was $30 million. There's the basis of the lawsuit.
Yes. Now, I want to make sure that we can hear you. If you can speak up a little bit, or I can ask Seth to maybe boost your volume a little bit. I just have the feeling.
I thought I was speaking pretty well, but I'll try and speak a little bit louder.
Seth, if you can hear me, maybe you can crank up Doug's volume just a little bit, the main level. Okay. Thank you for that wonderful explanation.
Peter discovered in early 2001 that there had been a couple false FEC reports, And he made an effort to try to convince Hillary Clinton she needed to declare his money accurately. He went to the extent of when he filed his civil lawsuit for this business fraud case, which was in June of 2001. David Kendall was actually served with the lawsuit on July 11, 2001, and Peter included in that lawsuit that Kendall accepted on her behalf receipts of $1.6 million, so that there was no question that that's what he had spent, and yet she still made her third false report July 30th of 2001, in which they declared the value of this concert at just over $400,000. She knowingly made three false reports. Ultimately, her campaign finance chairman, David Rosen, was criminally charged for the false reporting. He was acquitted in May of 2005.
Oh.
And you talk about judges. This was an amazing case, Don. A federal judge named A. Howard Matz presided over the criminal trial of David Rosen. Matz happened to be a Clinton appointee. Before the trial began, Matz told the jury that Peter Paul was a thoroughly discredited individual. He was totally corrupt and he couldn't be believed. So what did he do? He totally impeached Peter's ability to be a witness in this case. The prosecution then couldn't call Peter, the star witness. They never called Kelly Craighead, who was on the inside of everything here with Hillary and knew about everything. It looked like it was the 1919 Black Sox and they were throwing the case. And so very quickly, Rosen was, in just a matter of several hours, I think was the time frame, he was acquitted.
Did any of this go before the California Board of Judicial Review?
Not yet, and Peter's thought about doing that, but he's got so many battles he's fighting. It should have had, and I don't know what the statute of limitations is on this. I actually delivered a scathing 6-page letter to the judge last year demanding that he do something about this and he be held accountable for it. Another interesting part is a U.S. attorney, and your listeners have to understand, Don, when George Bush came into the White House, there were Clinton holdovers everywhere in our government, and they have wreaked havoc. They're in the State Department and the Defense Department and the CIA. They're in the FBI. They're in the Department of Justice, and they do Clinton's bidding for him. Peter actually has some great evidence in this case, including several hours of home video with Hillary Clinton, which shows that what she's been saying all along about him is just a total lie.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen in the civil court is all this is going to be proved, and what's going to be shown in the civil case through discovery are the FEC crimes that had been committed by Hillary, her obstruction of justice, a U.S. attorney actually hiding video evidence of her really committing a crime. If you saw the 13-minute clip, Peter was able to acquire in April of last year, after a 2-year battle by his attorney, a 5-minute video that has, he's taking the video, Stan Lee's in it, Aaron Tonkin, another employee, and on the phone, making a call to Stan Lee Media with Hillary Clinton. Hillary is thanking them for what they are doing, says that her aide, Kelly Craighead, has totally briefed her, offers her help in anything they need. Kelly will let them know what she needs, and she admitted to calling and soliciting Cher. Now, they make the claim, David Kendall said, no, she was just being nice. That's all you see on the film. Well, that's not the case at all, because what Cher required to perform was Hillary Clinton actually closing the deal. Aaron Tonkin set it up. It required Hillary to call both Diana Ross and Cher to close it. The effect of what that is, Don, her solicitation of this money made the entire $1.6 million Peter spent hard money and totally illegal, because the most he could have given is $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it was $1.6 million. The FEC has never addressed this. They cleared Hillary. They fined her treasurer. But they let her off the hook never having the evidence. The evidence wasn't available during the David Rosen trial, and no one has wanted to pay attention to it. I'm going to name a name. Almost a year ago, I met face-to-face with Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine, shared all of this information with him, he seemed genuinely interested, but for some reason, either he didn't want to do the story, or his bosses at Newsweek wouldn't let him do the story because they wanted to protect Hillary Dunn.
Well, I mean, this is astounding. Now, in fairness to Peter, let me and this is in reference to the comments that the judge made about his character.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I raise a great issue with the fact that the judge is allowed to enter his personal comments, libelous, slanderous comments, to a jury, which are not fact in the case. They have
Peter did have a criminal background.
I understand that. This is where I'm going. Peter told me that his criminal background, and it's related to the coffee caper that you described in the beginning,
sure,
that he was set up, that someone had planted something in his garage, and within 30 minutes after that happening, they came and arrested him. So it was a setup.
Yeah, another interesting thing about that is that the government in a wiretap relative to another part of this case actually knew about the entire thing. They had Peter with a woman from whom he was soliciting money to pull off this thing. They had it all on tape before it happened. The government knew this was going to happen, and Castro was going to be ripped off, and they let it happen anyway, Don. That's what's astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter had some later trouble, and that's when Stanley Media was collapsing. He was trying to keep the price artificially propped up, buying stock at a high price at the end of the day to be the last trade of the day, and as an insider owner of the company, he was not allowed to be doing that. So he ultimately pled guilty to a 10b-5 stock violation, so he had another felony on his record. But nevertheless, I argue, and I've argued in print on Free Republic and other places, if the judge is going to comment on Peter Paul's record, what about the defendant? The defendant in this case lost his law license. He committed perjury. He suborned perjury. He had witnesses intimidated. He lost his right to practice before the Supreme Court. If you're going to talk about the plaintiff's problems, what about the defendant's problems, Bill Clinton? And he was impeached, too, as you recall.
Mm-hmm.
So what the judge essentially did, and I've talked to Dave Shippers about this, and actually Dave appears in our film. Dave, for those who don't know, was a lifelong Democrat, a guy who did courageous work early in his career in the Kennedy Justice Department. He helped take down the Chicago mob. Dave actually voted for Clinton twice, believe it or not. And when impeachment came around, his friend Henry Hyde called on him to prosecute the impeachment. And I thought that was a brilliant move on Hyde's part because they couldn't claim that Dave Shippers was part of any vast right-wing conspiracy. I've talked to Dave a number of times. He is astounded. He said, Doug, I thought I was going to be there for a couple weeks during impeachment, and we're going to wrap all this up. He says, when I saw the amount of criminal behavior that we discovered, I was astounded. The public only knows a very small tip of the iceberg, Don. The Clintons really are a criminal enterprise.
Oh, yes. Now, we're not going to talk about this tonight. However, I'm going to be on another talk show on another network, and I don't want to demean this one. I love this network I'm on right now. But I'll be on Jeff Rentz's show tomorrow night sometime before I go on the air here. And we're going to talk about some genealogy research I've done, and it'll blow your mind. Let me say that.
You could talk about Rockefeller.
Well, I'm not focusing it on Bill. This is on Hillary. I've gone down a hole that the rabbits won't go down.
that would be interesting.
Okay.
Anyway, let me tell you where we are. There's a status conference coming up April 25th in Los Angeles Superior Court, and they're going to set a trial date and open up the way for discovery. And we anticipate Hillary testifying in August during a congressional recess. Although they could make a request and a demand and you know, give her a subpoena to come and testify. While Congress is in session, it would have no enforcement. The judge can't order from the bench that she be picked up. So she's essentially immune from that stuff until the congressional recess, which is the beginning of August. So we anticipate that a short time before the convention, while she's plotting to steal the nomination from Obama, that we're going to have this woman under oath. And here's what's really interesting. I was in the courtroom on April 7th, 2006, when David Kendall turned in her sworn declaration to the court. And my goodness, Don, that declaration is a work of fiction. She has even set up her own daughter for perjury. Let me explain how. First of all, after she had sworn she could and would testify competently if called upon to do so, her next sentence was a lie. She said, "I remember meeting Mr. Peter Paul sometime early in 2000. We have them. I told you earlier about the home videotapes. Mm-hmm. Peter has on tape them together at the home of a Hollywood producer early in 2000. Laughing about when they really first met in 1993 when Peter represented Fabio. He made Fabio's career. He actually had Fabio at the Italian-American Foundation dinner. Chase Hillary around the room and pick her up in a romance pose." Pretty funny.
Yeah,
some people have claimed I'm making that up. Well, when Bill spoke at the Italian-American Foundation dinner the next year, he referenced the event and said how Hillary was not the same for weeks afterward. The point of that is, Hillary claimed she met him in 2000. That's a lie. She's not going to forget the guy who had Fabio chase her around. She also had claimed that she knew nothing of this business relationship where Peter Paul would spend this huge amount of money and become the largest donor in the history of any federal campaign, the largest individual donor ever. She knew nothing about the relationship of Bill agreeing to come to work for Stanley Media. What's interesting about that is that the day after the August 12, 2000 event, Barbara Streisand had a brunch for library donors. In front of witnesses, Chelsea told how the family stayed up late playing Scrabble, and they were discussing how excited they were that Dad was going to work for the man who created Spider-Man. So essentially what Hillary has done is set up her own daughter to have to commit perjury to protect her political career. And what we're going to find out something interesting, finally. We know that Bill's a liar. We know that Hillary's a liar. We're going to find out if perjury is genetic, Don.
Yes. Yes. I wonder if there's a blue suit in this.
No blue suit, but we've got a better equivalent, and that's hours of home video. So when Hillary says she can't remember anything that was discussed at the Spoggle luncheon, she's going to be shown film of things she couldn't possibly forget.
Oh, yes. Peter paraphrased for me some of her statements. Now, she was not deposed, I understand, for this
not
case.
Not yet. We're looking at August.
Yeah. I'm speaking about the first case.
During the David Rosen trial, they didn't call many of the important witnesses. They didn't call Howard Wolfson. Howard Wolfson is Hillary's official spokesman, and my goodness, is that guy a lying weasel, Don. To hear him come out every day with the things he puts out, he's just absolutely shameless. I talked about that phone call in which Cher was solicited and Hillary was offering all of her help to show that she directly solicited this money. 6 days prior to that was another conference call on June 11th, 2000. Howard Wolfson was part of that. Kelly Craighead was part of it, Jim Levin, a defendant, was part of it, Peter was part of it, and David Rosen. And they actually discussed a budget of about $1.2 million for this event.
Yeah.
Everybody knew it was going to cost that much money, and yet some of these witnesses were never called. David Rosen knew it, and nevertheless, David Rosen was charged with turning in an invoice that claimed that this event cost $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did he do it? There was compelling evidence that he did cause that invoice to be filed. But the funny thing is, he didn't have unique information. Everybody knew it cost over $1 million. They were in on the phone call. They saw these expenses being made. The government charged David Rosen and should have charged Hillary Clinton and her campaign finance chairman because they were up to their eyeballs in this conspiracy, Don.
Mm-hmm. Now, people, for the listeners, Peter explained this to me so I could understand how this actually went down. And you mentioned the rainmaker scenario after mm-hmm. Bill got out of office, that
sure.
he would take advantage of his prestige and his popularity and use him as a front man for the company.
Absolutely, he was still popular in Europe and Asia. He could have gone out and given speeches, and the company would have raised a boatload of money.
Well, it was Bill's suggestion that he give the $1.2 million as a campaign contribution to Hillary's senatorial campaign. That's the significance.
It wasn't in dollars that he gave it, but what Pete did is paid the expenses. It was called an in-kind. But nevertheless, it's treated as if it were a check, absolutely.
It would be the same as throwing a dinner or whatever. In fact, I'm sure there was dinner and drinks and entertainment, obviously.
Oh, there was after the big concert, there was a dinner. It was $25,000 a couple.
Yes. So, and that's a little bit more than $2,000.
It indeed is. And what ties it all together are those two conference calls that I described. Mm-hmm. They claimed all along this was for a joint fundraising committee. And the laws are a little bit different when you raise money not directly for a candidate. You can raise it for a joint committee, which is how they launder the money, and they all do it. Mm-hmm. But in this case, her direct participation in this and the direct participation of her agents made that money hard money. And unfortunately, that evidence was in the office of a U.S. attorney and not available during a criminal trial or during official investigations. You may see a U.S. attorney be called as a witness in this case, Don.
Wow. Now, she, according to what Peter told me, and I'm paraphrasing this, her initial explanation regarding Bill having been approached by Peter for this business deal was something to the effect of, well, I don't really recall him mentioning that to me, and since he didn't mention it to me, it probably didn't happen, because if it would have happened, I would remember it.
Since I don't remember it,
didn't happen.
Her sworn declaration, I call it a work of fiction. I mean, she doesn't remember anything that happened, and because she can't remember it, then it must not have happened. She's the smartest woman in the world.
It must have been a left-wing conspiracy.
Yeah. Let me give, if I could, a plug for our website. All of documentation, and it really is extensive, is on a website called hillcap.org, hillcap.org. You can go to that website, and I'm certain there's a link there also. Peter is in desperate need of some money for his attorneys. We're fighting a huge battle. He'd love to hire a very expensive one from New York who will do the case, but he's got to raise a ton of money for it. Also, you can order the film. I'm pretty sure on Hillcap is a link to the film. For those who haven't seen the 13-minute segment, if you will Google Hillary Uncensored on Google Videos, is a 13-minute segment that was actually for our own use. It was an unedited piece of the film. Lucianne Goldberg found the URL, or someone alerted her to it. It was for our own use and for that of the media, but Lucianne leaked it, and since October, over 6 million people have seen it.
And still the media, now the media did report this a little bit. I mean, there are even snippets of a 60 Minutes story, but they didn't really do it justice, did they?
No, and Brian Ross did a piece on this in July 2001. And what was interesting is Disney Brass, the day before it ran, made sure that the name David Rosen, which directly tied her to everything that was going on here, campaign finance chairman, we show clips in the film of about 16 references back and forth. And we saw David Rosen. Well, yeah, David Rosen. We saw clip after clip after clip. Not one mention of David Rosen was done in that 2001 2020 piece.
Mm-hmm.
Disney made him remove it. I got another interesting story about Disney. The path to 9/11 was a magnificent two-piece film, a great film exposing, you know, Clinton and his failure to go after Osama bin Laden. What is interesting about that is Disney Brass has refused to allow that to go to DVD.
Well,
they made a political decision because they wanted to protect Hillary.
Doug, we know that Osama bin Laden was a creation of the CIA. In fact, I wrote about a story. Now, this J. Orland Grabby originally reported this meeting, but there was a meeting at the Hilton in Sherman Oaks, California, in 1986, and he met with Ralph Oberg, Ted Gunderson, who was at the time the Los Angeles supervisory special agent for the FBI, Michael Reconosciuto, and Tim Osman, the unbearded Osama bin Laden. And they discuss cash, they discuss weapons, we're talking Stinger missiles, computer software, and Red Mercury.
And we had an interest at the time, unfortunately, in getting into bed with a bad guy to beat the Soviets. And as you well know, we got in bed with the Soviet Union, and we got in bed with Stalin in World War II because we had to beat Hitler, Don. And sometimes geopolitical considerations cause us to do business with bad people. It was in our interest at the time that the Soviets lost in Afghanistan.
And then they
it comes back to bite us, but that's the way the world works.
And then they end up being partners with the Bush family, which I find very interesting, too. In fact, they were ushered out of the United States on 9/11. it's pretty incredible. But not that we need to go there now. This is not the time to
do that. This is the Peter Paul time after a battle that's lasted many years. A court date, as I mentioned, April 25th status conference are finally going to set it.
Yeah.
Depositions are going to go out. Subpoenas are going to go out. Al Gore is going to be called to testify. Chelsea, Bill, Hillary, Ed Rendell, Howard Wolfson, Terry McAuliffe, Kelly Craighead, and a bunch of Hollywood stars, including Streisand and others. Brad Pitt. It's going to be a mega trial. Can't wait to get Ed Rendell under oath. Ed, I call Howard Wilson a weasel. Ed Rendell is an amazing weasel. Peter was first solicited by Rendell, who was going to show him the ropes to how to make his proposal to the president by supporting the Democratic Party. The first event he paid $30,000 at the Café des Artistes for a DNC fundraiser, and then Ed got him to pay for an Al Gore event, June 8, 2000, at the Beverly Hills Hotel. It cost Peter over $100,000. Ed never declared that money. And I've been sending him faxes hammering him over it. I've been trying to get a Philadelphia reporter to actually report on it, but a lot of people in Pennsylvania seem to be scared against this guy, and maybe they've got reason to be scared of him.
Yeah.
He also didn't have declared $150,000 stock pledge that day. He didn't get declared $35,000 Peter spent on June 9th for the Spago luncheon for Hillary, or $25,000 for an afternoon tea, or the $150,000 stock pledge to Hillary's campaign. Ed has hidden a lot of stuff, and we can't wait to get him under oath.
Now, do you think there's a chance that this case will be televised? I mean, we got to see the O.J. Simpson trial.
Nah, that was a criminal case. A civil case isn't going to be televised.
Yeah.
The depositions, however, are going to be on film. I expect that maybe David Kendall's going to try to see that gets suppressed, but I really don't see how he can do that in a civil case.
No, that's...
People say Hillary's never going to be under oath. If people recall, a sitting president of the United States was called in to testify, and that was in the Paula Jones civil case that led to criminal matters. He was called to testify. So, yeah, Hillary's going to be under oath. David Kendall's going to try and move for a summary judgment and stop this thing, but there's compelling reasons that it's not going to be stopped. The judge in this case is Aurelio Munoz. I think he was a Gray Davis appointee, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But he's not a federal judge, so he wasn't a Clinton appointee. That's the good news. At least we don't have a Clinton connection. I was in the court when he said he would entertain no motion to prevent Senator Clinton from testifying in this case. And he had a pause, and he looked at Kendall and said, "Did you hear that, Mr. Kendall?" So it appears there's every intention of this judge that this thing is going to run its course and that Hillary is going to finally be under oath. And she's going to be confronted with all of these tapes when she says she can't recall. The public is going to see there are things that she absolutely, anybody would have recalled, especially someone as smart as she is.
Well, he certainly has a collection of snippets of you know, them posing for the cameras and her thanking large groups of people by name, one by one. She goes through the list of people. why would you so profusely thank people for something that didn't happen?
And why would Hillary Clinton allow Peter Paul to do all of this filming of her? Why? Because he spent a fortune on her for this business relationship. That's why.
Yes.
Yeah, it's obvious. People are going to see a great snippet from Spoggle Lunch where Hillary's talking about having him. Peter attended Dartmouth. By the way, I showed our film at Dartmouth last October. I made an East Coast tour. I actually debuted it at Harvard on Hillary's birthday. We sent her an invitation, but I guess she decided she wasn't going to come. It was her 60th birthday. Probably a wise move. Anyway, Peter attended Dartmouth. He was there in 67 when Hillary went on a blind date on what's called Winter Carnival there. And it's really funny because they're discussing on camera and laughing about it. The blind date was with a surfer, the only one at Dartmouth. He comes from the West Coast, and he's freezing his butt off. I guess he didn't know what the weather was like in northern New Hampshire. But he gets drunk. He's at Winter Carnival. He strips down to his swimming trunks, gets his surfboard, and goes across the street to the golf course and is trying to surf the little snow-covered moguls. Everybody came out to watch. They're laughing. She's worried that the guy is going to freeze to death out there. And they're talking about this on camera. And yet Hillary swears under oath she can't remember anything they discussed at Spago. And they talked about Burt Lance and his anti-Castro activities and many things that are going to show her to be a liar, Don. So we hope the public's going to see that there was a false declaration turned into the court. And maybe with the evidence that Peter has, perhaps she's not going to get away with it this time.
Well, there's a lot more that that she's been involved in terms of much larger sums of money. And that information has come out, and she's been able to skirt around it. They're doing sort of an Irish jig, if you want to use that term. Nothing against the Irish, of course.
Hope not, since I'm Irish.
Yes. Well, you get the idea. It's like
sure.
The river dance they're doing,
sure.
Okay? trying not to keep the feet on the ground, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they're you know, it's all coming to light. It's
you know
taking
what?
A while.
Elliot Ness finally got Al Capone. It took him a long time to do it. And maybe this is finally going to be Hillary Clinton's Waterloo. I just love to see the news today, Don, where they've got tape of her and this supposed dangerous sniper firing corkscrew landing in Bosnia that she's just being humiliated on. She's just shown to be an obvious liar.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. And I think maybe more Americans are seeing it. They don't like what she's done to Obama, who on his own right is just a total empty suit.
Yeah.
What a trio of presidential candidates we have this year. Good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Just for your information, Doug, I have not seen the whole video. You know what that means.
Yeah, and I apologize. I forgot to call the company that distributes it today, but I will give them a call in the morning. If I can't verify that they sent it, I'll make sure you get it done.
Okay. But I can tell everyone that the trailer is absolutely fantastic. Now, the Hillcap site also has quite a bit of documentation there.
It's got the court case, all of the pleadings, the FEC reports, links to everything, links to Peter's photo album with all these pictures of the Clintons. You know, what's really a couple of real other funny items is when they were denying Peter's relationship to them just 3 days after this concert, 2 days after the first article came out in the Post, they sent letters of thank you behind the scenes with Hillary writing that she will remember it always. And they even 10 days later, by fax, ask Peter for another $100,000. When they've got Howard Wolfson out there lying, denying that the campaign would take any money from Peter Paul. It's just amazing.
And autographed pictures, too, I think. Too.
Yeah.
Didn't they send them? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And Peter would not give another penny until he verified with Bill himself personally that they still had a deal. And that meeting was arranged September 22nd, 2000, a tarmac of LAX. Bill Clinton stepped off the plane, and there was Peter Paul, and he assured him they still have a deal. He gave him a personal tape and told him how grateful he was again for all that he had done for him. And so Peter Actually, he wired $55,000 in untraceable securities on behalf of Hillary to the Working Families Party. That's where she demanded the money go, which was another crime. You can't use federal funds for a state party like that. And that money was never declared either. So she is up to her eyeballs in directing this crime. And hopefully, even though the FEC or the Justice Department wouldn't do their job, we hope the civil case is going to show all America what she really pulled off here, Don. And it's not going to be a pretty picture.
Well, it's kind of coincidental, or is it, or ironic, that that this judge was so vehemently in defending her. I mean, he was acting like a defense attorney, you know, at the onset of
that
criminal.
That's what it seemed.
Yeah, it's kind of the way, you know, I don't have all the pertinent details at my fingertips regarding the Vince Foster murder investigation, but the special prosecutor was Kenneth Starr, who was also the attorney for her Children's Defense Fund. And we know that at least $250 million went into that account in 1993. It's funny you mentioned 1993.
Big year, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was, Starr was, it gives the hint that he's protecting them. And in fact, Michael or Miguel Rodriguez, who was an assistant investigator on that, on Starr's team.
I remember Miguel quit in protest.
Oh yeah, I think he was kind of demoted in a way. He was sent to work in Sacramento and then underwent a sex change. You know, people do things like that, but it was just, he wanted evidently just to absolve himself of any memory of that case. But he went and recorded several hours of interviews describing exactly what went on there, the evidence that he found, and how the Foster murder, which you have to tie to the Clintons and Hillary. It was Hillary's pet project.
I'm not willing to say Vince was murdered, Don. But I've never accused the Clintons of murder, although I know a lot of people have died. I've linked it to the Dixie Mafia. People just know what they need to do to protect their boss. Clintons don't have to tell them to do anything, and that's how I relate it. Let me tell you a story about Vince. I became friends with three troopers in Arkansas, one of whom was L.D. Brown. And I helped L.D. with a book tour when he came out here to L.A. several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He spent 6 years driving Bill around. Two other troopers, Patterson and Perry. After Vince's body was found, and it was found at 6:15 or thereabouts, a call came in to Roger Perry, who was on duty at the governor's mansion in Arkansas. And a woman named Helen Dickey, Chelsea's nanny, called and told Roger, you're not going to believe what just happened. Vince just went out in the parking lot and shot himself. Perry immediately called Patterson, his buddy, who had just gotten home after his shift with the state police, and told him the story. They then told the head of the state police, Lynn Dickey. I've seen all three of their affidavits. So they peg it at sometime between 6 and 7 o'clock. Helen Dickey, when she was called in to testify before the D'Amato committee, swore under oath she didn't find out until 10 o'clock. She was lying. I made many calls to D'Amato's office yelling at them that they've got to get the troopers there to testify. And they, of course, they'd just hang up on me. They did not want to hear it. Pretty sure D'Amato had a spokesman make a comment, or he made a comment that the troopers didn't want to testify. That's just a bald-faced lie. Their testimony and the lie of Helen Dickey and pegging the time they knew Vince was dead would have probably ended the Clinton presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if Helen is correct,
yeah.
I believe that Vince very much was depressed. I believe that the blood-tainted blood scandal was going to come out. I think the pressures could have been so much, it is possibly killed himself. But I believe his body was taken to the park.
Yeah.
Because they wanted the park police to investigate, not the FBI, because the FBI would have sealed his office as a crime scene, and then they couldn't have raided the office that night. So Did Vince kill himself? Some people believe so. Some people think he's murdered. The jury, I think, is out on that, but I tend to believe the Helen Dickey story, that Vince killed himself in the parking lot.
The evidence that came out via Michael or Miguel Rodriguez was such that the wounds were not where they were proclaimed to have been by the coroner.
Yeah,
nor
there
was
so
the
many wrong
thing.
Things with this.
Yeah.
So many anomalies with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, on the Peter Paul front, we hope people will get on hillcap.org and start reading. I met Peter 3 years ago. I've been on this project now.
Mm-hmm.
I have vetted thousands and thousands of pages of documents. He has a real story. A real crime was committed here. A real civil fraud was committed here. And hopefully this poor guy is going to have his day in court. He doesn't want anybody to feel sorry for him. He just wants to see that justice is finally done. He sees Hillary Clinton as an absolute pernicious threat to this country. And I do, too. And I can tell you, Don, the first thing that's going to happen if she gets elected is she's going to get rid of one of the FCC commissioners, put her own person in there, and without Congress having to lift a finger or debate a word, she's going to install the Fairness Doctrine and shut down talk radio. And when she does that, who's going to do anything about it? The Republicans? No, they won't do anything about it.
Yeah.
She will pull off executive orders and presidential decision directives with impunity. The bar has been raised so high for impeachment it would never happen, and her party certainly wouldn't do it. She'll again get rid of every U.S. attorney, get rid of career people, which is what Bush didn't do, which is why he had so much trouble in every branch of our government, and she's going to take control of this government like no one ever has. That's my prediction if we have a Hillary Clinton presidency, Don.
Yeah. Well, this is a complex story, and I know there's much more. Would you entertain the possibility of coming back for another interview and maybe going into some of these side issues, I think, not where we went tonight.
Sure. And I can talk more about other witnesses and more about what they did to him, more about additional evidence in the civil trial, which
mm-hmm.
will be considerable.
My main reason for bringing this up, you know, we could go into Whitewater, we could go into the Rose Law Firm.
People are going to say it's old.
Well, it's old, but these things have never been really... handled properly, you know.
The interesting thing about this one, Don, she made her fourth false FEC report in 2006. It's not that old. And
mm-hmm.
the conspiracy continues. I think in the 13-minute clip we showed Stan Lee. Stan Lee is on tape under oath in his deposition swearing that he gave no money, and yet in their fourth false report, after they were ordered to do one after the campaign was fined, they claimed he gave $225,000. That's a lie. He gave nothing. And they
mm-hmm.
know that. And they're just in the face of the law with impunity.
Well, I mean, he would be required to come up with some proof as to how he gave her that money. I mean,
they just reported it to the FEC. We've put Stan on notice and Hillary to correct this. Peter tried to get the FEC to open a new investigation, which they won't. The Senate Ethics Committee won't open a new investigation. The Department of Justice doesn't seem to want to do anything about it. The Clintons are above the law. And as you saw with the previous guest, when John was here, judges can do whatever they want. And they just get away with it.
Well, we have to take a stand. And of course, I want to thank you for being so knowledgeable about this whole issue. And for coming on the show and for standing up for Peter. I don't know that there's a gag order. I think it's just in his best interest to let things take their course during the trial. He's definitely...
I want people to know about it, and I'll tell you this. Six million people have seen this 13-minute segment. I don't know how much of a difference it's made, but I think it's made a dent in the Queen.
Yeah. Well, Doug, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you profusely for coming on board. And if you talk to Peter in the near future, give him my best and let him know that we're praying for his success in this.
Appreciate that. I'll be glad to be back again.
Okay, good. And it'll be soon.
Okay, good night, John.
All right, you have a good night.
Great. Same to you.
Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And our special guest tonight, Douglas Kogan and John Klar, will be back with us again in the near future. In fact, John Klar will make another appearance tomorrow, as well as on the TNT NewsHour for one full hour on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. And then again in the evening with my special guest, Michael Anthony, we are going to do a three-way forum. Again, John Klar will be joining us on that show at 10 p.m. Pacific time. So if you're confused about the times, you can certainly go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on radio schedule, and it'll come up there. You'll see who the guests are and when the shows air. And in the meantime, I want to thank you for tuning into the show. I'm Don Nikoloff, and I will be back tomorrow evening at the same time. Peace, love, and light. And have a good night.